This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. To say that Ira Joe Fisher has done a lot in his life would be an understatement. He's worked in local and network radio and TV, performed in film and on stage, taught in college classrooms, authored several books of poetry. He's found success as a talk show host, DJ, reporter, writer, poet, song and dance man, and business consultant. But most of us who were in Cincinnati during the 80s will remember him first as the cheerful, backward-riding weatherman. So what is he up to these days? Ira Joe Fisher joins us, along with WVXU radio and TV writer John Kiesewetter. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ira and John, thanks for being here this afternoon. Good to talk to both of you.
Well, thank you, Mark, and hello, John.
Hey, Ira Joe, we haven't talked in a while. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And my goodness, what an impressive introduction you gave to me, Mark. I'm
amazed, Ira, at all the things you've done in your life. I mean, where did you find the energy to do all this?
Well, gosh, that's a difficult thing to answer. You know what? It's all about love. It's all about passion. And I've just really lived a blessed life where I have worked with dear people and have been in situations where the opportunities were presented themselves, either ideas that I had or ideas that were suggested to me. So I guess the energy just climbed aboard and held on tight because it's just been a wonderful ride.
Well, it's cool to have you here on the radio because that was really your first love. You grew up and you started in radio, what, at age 16? Is that right?
That's right. Yep, WGGO Radio in Salamanca, New York, the voice of the Southern Tier. And I felt like I was in Hollywood. I was 16 years old, and I'm working at this 1,000-watt daytime station, and yet it was just magic. I think my favorite job was always in radio, because that way people didn't have to look at me. And it was just wonderful, that theater of the mind, the imagination was just really invigorating.
Well, you were inspired by radio early. Didn't you once tell me that you could get one of the Cincinnati stations when you were growing up?
Yes, I could. WCKY. You could hear it in Little Valley, New York. Am I saying that right?
Yes. Country music?
WCKY. I grew up listening to WKBW, a rock and roll radio station then in Buffalo that was just so entertaining, and I just loved it so dearly, as did all of my contemporaries. But yes, I could hear WCKY, and I would listen also to WLS in Chicago. Little Valley, the town where I grew up in western New York, is south of Buffalo and much farther west than New York City. So we were able to capture and benefit from the signals emanating from the Midwest.
You know, you remind me of something there, Ira. When I was a kid, I had a transistor radio, and some people, well, a transistor radio, what's that?
Yeah, I had a
transistor radio with an earphone. And this is how radio started to influence me when I was a kid. I would go to bed at night, and I would put the radio under my pillow so my parents didn't know I had it in there. Plug the earphone in, I'd listen to WSAI at night, which was the So that's what got me hooked on radio, was my exposure to SAI as a kid, that transistor radio.
So Ira Joe, how did you begin this?
With different call letters was my story too.
Mm-hmm. So, Ira Joe, how did you begin the whole backward writing thing, and how did you then merge it with doing the weather?
Well, I was working in Spokane, which was my stop just before I came to Cincinnati in 1980. When I was a little kid in the third grade, I struggled with what was then called arithmetic, John. And in Mrs. Remington's third grade arithmetic class, I struggled mightily. Part of the reason was, rather than do the arithmetic or even attempt to do it, I would doodle pictures in the margins of our assignment sheets. And I also, for some reason that I simply cannot fathom, I discovered that I was able to write backwards in the third grade. And it occurred to me later in life that, gee, why do this for free? Why not try to make a living?
It's a useful talent.
I don't know if it was talent, but it was a discovery. It wasn't something that I had to teach myself. I have since talked with people who deal with brains, and I do have one, and they attribute it to a thing called reversed perception. And it's hardly unique. I, when I was still active in broadcasting, would receive letters frequently and often from people, and they would write them backwards. So it's not a unique ability, but it was one that I capitalized on. I presented it in Spokane. Our news director, Dean Mell, asked me if I would be interested in doing the weather, and he said to me, he asked me, would you like to do the weather? I said, I don't know anything about the weather. He says, you don't have to. This is television. So that was my opening of the door into that world. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a meteorologist. And, in fact, I don't even like the subject of weather. But I said, okay, I will do it. But how about if we do it backwards? He said, no, you can't do that. And I proved to him by writing on a piece of paper and holding it up to the window that, yep, I can. And so I did.
and the rest, as they say, is history.
It's history, yes. Yeah. You know what it was? These were little cylinders the size of a chubby cigarette. They were cylinders of clown grease paint makeup that we kept in the freezer. And even when it was brought into the studio, there was a brick of ice that would keep it as close to frozen as possible. If not, of course, it would then just turn into, well, Smucker's jam. So by keeping it frozen, you were able, or I was able, to make a distinct enough line with it on the plexiglass. So I thought it was tremendous fun. I really did.
So you run into people nowadays.
And that way I didn't have to turn around and you couldn't see my bald spot.
Did you still run into people who say, I remember you for that? That's the big thing I remember you for.
Well, yes, I do. But most of them are pretty gray-headed now. So
yeah.
Young people don't
like John
remember
and me.
At all.
So I hadn't heard that story until it was mentioned. You explained it on my Facebook page. But so up at Channel 12 in the freezer is this big stash of, or was this big stash of frozen clown makeup?
That's right, clown grease paint makeup, and it came. It came from a a cosmetic store in Brooklyn, New York. When I worked in Spokane and when I worked in Cincinnati. And then when I went to New York, the commute for the grease paint makeup was a much shorter one. But for some reason, I don't know why we arrived at that being the gold standard of clown grease paint makeup, but it was. It came from a place in Brooklyn.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ira Joe Fisher. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So I have to ask you, Ira, what have you been doing with yourself lately?
I'm in the college classroom. I'm teaching creative writing. I started out years ago teaching destructive writing, and I thought there's no future in that. So I've turned to creative writing, and I teach creative writing, and I teach poetry. When some years ago, I've always been a writer and contributed some things to Cincinnati Magazine and was on the staff of Spokane Magazine. So I've always been enamored of writing, and also did a lot of video essays at Channel 12, which delighted me a great deal. And by the way, Nick Clooney was always so encouraging of me doing that. You know, he is just, he's the absolute best on the planet.
Yeah, you worked with a pretty legendary bunch there at Channel 12.
Well, yes. Yeah. Well, my goodness. The names are unbelievable. I mean, we're talking Denny Jansen and Howard Ayne and Debbie Dixon and George Chicorone, Vicki Yates, or Kit Andrews. Don Burrows, who I simply cannot even think about without smiling, Rob Braun, just so many dear, wonderful people, and I don't want to go on any further for fear of neglecting anyone, but it was such a wonderful collection of people and an encouraging environment.
You did leave out one person. It's a woman named Edie Magnus, and you teach at her college, right?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Oh, I would never leave. In fact, one of our producers, Terry Gasper Keith, is coming to our house this evening. She lives in Dallas, but she's making a trip to the East. So she's spending the night here with Shelley and me, and we're going to get together with Edie this weekend. Oh, of course. Edie is so dear and is in charge of all of the publicity for Mercy College, which is one of the colleges where I teach. And so we get together not as often as I would like, but we get together pretty frequently. She's just so much fun.
Ira, I don't think too many people know that you're a poet. At least I never realized that. How did that whole interest start?
You know, it was a parallel passion of mine, John. When I was in high school and working in radio, in fact, I was in my English class, and I remember on a Friday we had finished reading Walden by Henry David Thoreau. Our teacher said, Mr. Felton, on Monday we're going to start a unit in poetry. And I remember, and I've even written a poem about it, that Bobby Miller groaned, Janie Campbell groaned, Perry Hemingway groaned, and I groaned. And then when Monday rolled around, oh my goodness, I fell in love with poetry. I remember the very first poem he assigned us was a poem called To a Waterfowl by William Cullen Bryant, which I thought was real pretentious. He used all three of his names. Yeah. Okay, good. I was waiting for the laughter there. And I said, gee, not only do I sort of understand this poem, I really like it. And it kindled in me a desire to work with the magic of words. And I have attempted to do that as a speaker and attempted to do that as a writer. And so that's really how it began. And so I had this parallel career of appearing on television in a variety of capacities and also writing on the side for publication. And it led to my first book, Some Holy Weight in the Village Air, my second book, Songs from an Earlier Century, and then my latest is called The Creek at the End of the Lawns. And I'm working on another book right now. And in fact, I'm working on a novel.
Wow, novelist! Add that to that long list of accomplishments.
So, were you writing?
I'm not bragging. Trust me, but I am speaking from such a position of great delight.
Were you writing poetry then, when you were off at home, your free time during your Cincinnati years?
Well, I'm such a lazy person that I can't assign the muse a time to contact me. It shows up whenever it will. So I would often be writing when I was at Channel 12, and sometimes even when the broadcast was being broadcast and I wasn't on camera, sometimes a thought would occur to me and I would write it down. But you know what? I am a voracious reader, and I always said, boy, I sure would like a job that would pay me to read. And then I started teaching in college, and bingo, there's the job that pays you to read. I do research, and I prepare my lessons, and it's all just such a joy. I love it. I love it so deeply.
Ira, can I put you on the spot? Can you give us an example of one of the poems that you've written?
Well, sure. You know what? I'm sitting here at my computer. I'm so embarrassed. And I, you know what I will do? I will find one that I hope carries a little more meat. But while I'm doing that, I will share with you a poem that is called, a two-line poem, as you know, is called A Couplet. And I wrote a poem, a two-line poem called Good Coffee. And it's essential that we understand that the title of the poem is Good Coffee. And the couplet says simply, please never worry about seeing me frown. I care less for the adjective than I do for the noun. I was going to call it A Couplet of Coffee, but that would have defeated the purpose of it. So there you go. And I'm thinking of writing a poem about poultry, and I'm thinking of calling it Chicken Couplet. But anyway, that's for another time. You know what I'm doing? You're looking now.
You're buying time.
This makes for great radio, doesn't it, while I'm here? All right. Here is a poem that is about my poetry god, and that is Robert Frost. And it's called, you want me to share it with you?
Sure.
Yeah, what are you going
Robert,
to say?
Robert Frost, your poetry hero.
There you go. He lived a part of his life in England, and he suffered a lot of grief throughout his life, which I shan't quantify at the moment. But anyway, this is a poem I wrote about imagining Frost in England. It's called Stride of Time. Whitened old man wades in the English hay and high daisies of a dimmock field, a field he'd hiked when young, when his wife lived and her hair always wisped from its clip. Their looks slipped day and night, a warm good, their children blurred and running. Now clouds drag him in the hills with rolling shadows from hedgerow to the valley grass tumbling to rest beneath the trees. He remembers his wife and their children and a Welsh friend who took a shell in the neck in the war. Whitened old man sees them all, in a broken shade beneath the trees, and coming here in so large a stride of time is a stick that stirs the grief time had banked.
All those years of watching you on TV, Ira, and I never knew you had this poetic side to you.
Well, you know, language is just so much fun, Mark, that, and I'm so enamored of it. This is a point I make to my students that, and I don't know if I have my figures correct here, but the point is well made, that Shakespeare invented thousands of words, something like, I don't know, maybe 3,000 words. And the King James Version of the Bible, which is contemporaneous with Shakespeare, contains something like 1,500 words. So Shakespeare knew more words than God, is the point I make to my students. And he, as you and I, was a mere mortal. And I said Shakespeare did everything with these words, syntactically arranging the words, rhyming them, rhythmicking them. He did everything with these words except copyright them. They belong equally to you and to me, as equally as they belonged to Shakespeare. And to me, it's great fun to play with them as though they do belong to me.
So, Ira Joe, you were also in the Fantastics for a long run, right?
Yes, I was, off and on for 5 years. I played Huckleby, the boy's father. Are you familiar with the story?
I'm not, but it just fascinates me. I would just think with your personality and what we saw on TV, you'd be a natural on stage.
Well, I shan't address that for someone else to say, but it was just tremendous fun, and I sang and I danced, and it is a humorous role, but there's also a poignance to it because it's about my son and it's about my friend's daughter. They fall in love, and we attempt to get them together by pretending to have a feud, which in the second act leads to an actual disagreement. And but it's a very happy ending. But, of course, we know Try to Remember the Kind of September, that wonderful, wonderful signature song from it. And I sang a song in a duet with the other father called Plant a Radish and Never Say No. And singing and dancing, can't do it anymore. I've had two hip replacements. So I'm running out of body parts, but it was so much fun.
Well, you know, the other interest in that, you're a poet, you've acted, you also conduct seminars on effective communications called Speaking Fearlessly. I think that's the title that you use for both businesses and individuals. So when you're doing these seminars, what's the top piece of advice you're giving people about effective communications?
Okay, I can give you that easily. You're talking always and only to one person. You're never talking to a group. I use the example of a Cincinnati experience. I once addressed 35,000 people, and it's true. The Reds invited me to be the MC for Fan Appreciation Night in 1981 or 82, and I spoke to 35,000 people, but my point is I didn't. I spoke to just one person. I want every person in the audience, and that was my approach on television and radio and poetry, frankly. I want each person who hears or reads my words to feel singled out for what I have to say.
Do you get a lot of satisfaction from doing those seminars, seeing how this kind of thing can change a person's life?
Well, I do. And, you know, as I always say, I'm not on the planet to hide. So, frankly, I love the attention. I really enjoy being up in front of people. But I do think that I have some strategies that I have acquired down through the years. This is something that Nick and I used to talk about a great deal, about how do we even bend the syllable of a word so as to properly inflect it and to communicate it properly. Yes, I do get a great deal of satisfaction.
From your years in Cincinnati, what's your favorite or a couple of favorite memories, either with doing a Channel 12 weather or you were co-host of PM Magazine?
And Ira, I'll tell you, we got about 30 seconds, so this will have to be
a
quick one.
Talk real fast.
All right, I'll leave out the verbs. I remember the friendships, I remember the conversations, and I remember the fireflies. And everybody talks about Cincinnati humidity. I just think of it as a great, great warmth. Whatever the season, that's what I remember.
You sound like you are the cup is half full kind of guy.
Well, I you know what? I'm a Hall of Fame warrior, but when it comes to my career and when it comes to friendships, wow, I'm so blessed.
Well, Ira Joe Fisher, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. And John Kieswetter, thank you, too, for joining us.
This was great fun. Say hi to Terry and Edie tonight.
I will do so. Keith, good to hear your voice. And Mark, thank you very much. You are both dear people, and I'm grateful for the attention.
Ira Joe Fisher and WVXU radio and TV writer John Kieswetter. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show, with help from Kevin Reynolds. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Data compiled by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights show a high level of racial inequality exists in our education system, and the percentage of minority and multiracial students is projected to increase substantially in the next 10 years. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss race and education. We'll also hear about the joys and challenges blended and non-traditional families have during the holiday season. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.